Father, and Mother, Father, I'm not telling you, Daddy. Glad to be in answer.
Thanks.
I'm glad to be in answer. This used to be a place that we used to come on a regular basis when I first got clean, because there wasn't a lot of any meetings in the area, so we used to love to travel. Mike and I were talking a little bit earlier about doing a lot of outside meetings, so I tried to make that a part of my early recovery, and it was part of like having fun.
You guys have
around the industry. Not that you're not going to have any fun while I'm in your talk. Because my head went off when they said that. Here it goes. I think they're going to laugh when I talk. Anyway, I'm glad to be in the meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. And, for those of you that are new, welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. And, hold on to your chair. And be quite right. It has been for me. Give you a little background information. First of all, I need to tell you how I'm feeling, because that's a really important part, because it's usually the makeup of my personality has been for a long time. That is that, I hate it when people ask me to speak in advance, because what happens is my head tells me that I need to be prepared. Like as if my story's going to change from talking to the right. But it will if I keep thinking that way. And so what happened was about a month ago, actually almost 2 months ago, right? Mike asked me to share this meeting, and I've already had a family commitment, so I had to turn him down. I called him this month and said, hey, I let you down last month, and I'm willing to show back up again. And as it would happen, I haven't spoken as a speaker in a speaker meeting probably for about 6 years. And that's the way it goes. Sometimes they ask you, sometimes they don't want to hear your story anymore. what it was all about being afraid. And I could say that in Narcotics Anonymous today, because I learned how to do that here. Because the thing about being prepared is about being afraid. I've always felt like I never ever measured up. I can't. I can remember early on being a kid that I just wasn't good enough. And I kind of continued to feel that way for a long time. And so it's no wonder I ended up using drugs and alcohol as a way to try and change on itself. You didn't have to do that today. You guys have taught me that what I could do is I could rely on a higher power, so I do the things that I do every morning. And, what I do is the first thing I do is, instead of laying in bed and thinking, I learned not to do that. Because normally what happens is, and I wrote about this the other day in my journal, normally what happens to me is the very first thing that comes out of my head is something negative. Literally. I had to kind of like think about that for a minute. It's like, don't give up, you're tired. You didn't sleep enough, right? And that's the way it starts. And shortly after that, it's about, what are you going to do today? Don't think about that, because, procrastination is something I love to do. And it's like, and then I start beating myself up because I haven't gotten that. So I've learned, I become conscious of my feet hit the floor and I hook it to the bathroom as quickly as possible. Because, in there sits my just for the day. And that's kind of how I start my day. Seeing God. And I try and read about something that has something to do with recovery so I can stop this thing from going off. Every once in a while I may stop and I may start talking to somebody else, and that's the disease of my for the addiction. Because I don't know about you guys, but I got several voices that go off in my head all the time, and one of them is out to get me. And I know that for a fact. So I'll pause and I'll talk to it. Don't shut up, because I do that sometimes. I have to do that. Because I know that if I continue to listen to it, it will continue to tell me the lies it's always told me my whole life. The bottom line is that I still feel that way sometimes, but Narcotics Anonymous has showed me that I don't have to use drugs to measure shame that I feel anymore. And that's it. So I'm not. I didn't expect that when I came here. And you're not going to hear me talk about a drug log. I'll give you a little bit about that. I had my first drink when I was 7 years old. And I shared this in a meeting last week when they asked me to speak there. The person who gave me that drink was very issue. And kind of a background on what that was like. They buried him with a can of Budweiser in his coffin. So that's the kind of culture I come from, where it's acceptable to do those kinds of things, and they knew him as a drinker, and it was okay, so let's help celebrate along the way,
right?
And that's how that can appear. And that's kind of like the way it was around the way that I was taught.
Yeah.
And it's not that it was their fault. Because I know that now today that I was the one who made the choice about picking up the drug or drinking the drink. In the beginning, I didn't really believe that. I thought it was necessary for me to do that because I never liked the way I felt about myself. And I bring that into recovery, and I know that that's a shortcoming that I have because the book identified that for me as that, but that's okay because you guys have taught me that there's a way that I can deal with that. You know, if I just followed some of the basic little suggestions that give me here in my practice, you know? I drank all the way to the time I was about 16. By the time I hit 16, I was drinking every day. And my parents owned a store, and we drank. And I like to remember part of those things because I remember they used to own a little mom and pop store. So I had access to alcohol all the time, whether they knew it or not. I mean, they were okay with me drinking at home, but, you know, not during the day. That's not something that you do, right? Unless you're an alcoholic or a drug addict, right? And so I would sneak back in the walk-in where we used to stack the beer and stuff, and I would open up one, suck it down, and I would feel better after I did that. And I did that for a long time. On the weekends, we went out partying, and I was the blackout drinker. All my friends could handle it, and I couldn't. It was like I didn't have a tolerance for alcohol, but it changed the way that I felt, so I did that. And then shortly after getting out of high school, I decided to join the military as a way to change my life on my very first geographic. And, in the military at that time, it was okay. They encouraged you to train. You know, I was sitting with the Veterans Administration a couple of days ago, and they were doing this psychiatric intake for me because I sought some help to them. And they were asking me about that. They asked me about, have I ever gone to jail? And I was telling them, you know what, back in the days, they used to let us get away with stuff, but they will not let you get away with it today. I remember going into town, and the worst thing that could ever happen to you is that the cops would tell your parents about what happened. And like that was like a no-no. I was like, do anything, go to jail, do anything, because I'm telling my parents, because I knew I was in for a beating if that happened, right? So it was okay to drink at home, but it wasn't okay to get caught drinking somewhere else. So what the cops would do is they pour the beer out, or the liquor, or whatever you were drinking, and say, you know, I get out of the city, we'll become a county problem. And so, they let us go over to the sheriff. The sheriff was like, take us home. And you know, that went on for a long, long period of time. You know, that thing about, I came into Narcotics Anonymous when I first got here. I felt I was different. You know, and they talked about it in the basic text about how as newcomers, what we do is we look at the differences and not the similarities, and that's what I did. When I got here, I was not like you guys. Because I had gotten away with a lot of other stuff that I never ever got caught for. And some of you guys, I got one of the prerequisites for being here was I had to use a prison time. Really, that's really what I thought. And Michael can attest to this. In the readings, they're talking about when you're in the meetings, don't have any drugs, or at that time they used to call it alcohol. But I was going, see, I know I'm not like you guys. Because I never slammed dope. I think it was like, so I had a hard time dealing with the fact that I was a drug addict when I first came here. You know, it was like it kind of paired into that. But because I was looking for the differences, not the similarities. And today I don't do that. I kind of look for, and I kind of enjoy myself watching people who are there, you know, in the beginning about, well, I'm different than that. I'm different than that. I'm just like you guys. I don't care what drug it was that you use. We all basically have the same kind of makeup. And, you know, it's like we did the same thing to try and change that. The difference today is that I found a program that's allowed me to work on those things and identify who I am, what I really am, and I'm okay with that today. You know, by the time I hit the military, we got I got arrested for Grand Theft Auto over alcohol and taking some uppers. They turned us back over to the military, and the military used to slap our hands and say, go do that again. And that's the way it went, you know. By the time I hit my third year in the military, this thing called Vietnam was coming up, and I got a call one day, and I had to send a funeral for a cousin of mine who got killed in Vietnam in 1966, and in Washington, 65. And so, at that time, before the draft came around, they were asking people if they wanted to volunteer to go over there, and I thought that I owed him something, so I volunteered to go. And I remember that time very, very vividly, because what had happened was, I think, all that fear that I carried with me all my life kind of like took off shortly after that. And it was, I couldn't take enough alcohol and enough drugs to be able to try and squelch that feeling of fear and inadequacy. And the thing that I want to share with you, because it was important to me, I remember my dad and I had this great relationship when I was a kid. And then he decided he was going to get remarried again. And that relationship kind of separated apart. It was the very first time I felt like I was abandoned. And so I developed this resentment that we all get, right, as drug addicts. And I made him pay debt heavily for that, with my resentment. And that was it. I started feeling like we were drifting apart, so I made it. And I ensured we drifted apart, but with all my actions. And all I really wanted to do was just be that kid who was loved. You know, I was threatened by the fact that he wanted to get remarried, because this relationship that him and I had from the time I was about 3 to the time I was about 6 was like probably the best bonding I've ever had. I knew I was going to lose that. And sure enough, when he got remarried, I did. You know, he started like dividing his time between her and us. And there was a lot of garbage that happened in between. And I remember that the day that I showed up at Travis Air Force Base to get the flight to Vietnam, he stood there looking at me, and I think he was afraid for me, and I thought he was on. And it kind of reinforced the fear that I have too, that what in the hell is he going on to Vietnam? He didn't know what the place was, didn't have any idea what that was. I was with this grandiose idea about, okay, they killed him, I got to kill somebody too. You know, and he put his arms around me for the first time in a long, long time. He told me that he loved me. And I got pissed off at him. I was angry. I was really angry. I was going, why did you wait till now to do that? And I said it out loud to him. You know, and I pushed him away from me. And I was angry. And what it was, I was really afraid. And I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to get that kind of feeling back. So I went there. I spent a year trying to survive. Luckily, I came out of there without any physical injuries. And, you know, that's still an issue today. One thing I've taken care of, a lot of things in my life through narcotics anonymous, and that's one of the things I kind of put on hold for a while. And, you know, I had an opportunity, you know, in the just of the day it passed, about how God, you know, will take care of you when you can't take care of yourself. And it talks in there about sometimes what he does is he closes the door and another door opens. Well, I got a chance to experience that, because, you know, that feeling, I kind of look back at that feeling about my dad hugging me then, and how I kind of like cut him off from that, and everybody else off from that point on. It was about it. You know, I don't want that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So I'm going to blame it on you, and I'm going to make you hurt every time I feel that way. That's what I did in addiction. Because I made you hurt every time that I felt like you were getting close to me, or that you know, you were going to tell me something like you love me. I wanted to make sure that you felt the pain that I felt. And I was pretty good at doing that. You know, and I come into narcotics anonymous, and one of the first things that you had to do is you teach me how to hunt. And so that one door closed, I didn't know it at the time. It was only after I got in recovery that I realized that door was going to open back up again. You know? And I loved it. Sometimes I go to mean just to get hugged. Because I'm serious. I'm literally serious about that, because I need that kind of love from you too. You know? And you guys taught me how to do that. And it's, for me, that's one of the rewards about coming back. I come back to it because I like that. I like that part. And then I learned that it wasn't just about the hug, it was about the unconditional love that you guys gave me too. You allowed me to make mistakes. And, from Vietnam, and after I got back from Vietnam, I proceeded to go through a period of time where I can't remember a lot of what happened. I know that when I got back, I was wearing a military uniform, and there was a lot of anti-war stuff that was going on. They jumped me off the trigger. I was in San Francisco, and it was right in the middle of the hippie era, and I was getting spit on, and I knew that I didn't need to have that military uniform on. So what I did was I was really so angry about that that when they discharged me off the trigger, and I caught a taxi to go into San Francisco to catch a flight, and I knew the taxi stopped on the big bridge right after and he wasn't going to stop, and so I pulled a knife out on him and stuck it in his neck, and I told him I was tricking if he didn't stop the taxi right now. And all I wanted to do was, like, discard myself from the military. So what I did was, he stopped, and I threw my seat bag over the edge, got back in the taxi, and I don't know why he didn't call the cops on me. You know, there's God looking for me again. And, you know, every time something like that would happen, like, what happened was, like, he gave me this illusion of power. I had this tremendous amount of power, see? I could get away with doing these kinds of things, and they got me in a lot of trouble. You know what I mean? So, because I continued to do that. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been caught by the cops, should have been arrested, and didn't get arrested for some reason. And, you know, it's like, one time I was coming back out of cruise in a blackout, I just scored a bunch of roads. I had about 100 roads on me, and they do a lot of amphetamines that day, and smoking some coke, and I was in a blackout, and I called blackout, because I remember, I don't even remember leaving. All I remember was the red lights coming on, and the cops were stopping me, and both of them had shotguns on me. And I was going, whoa, I got out going, you get that moment of clarity real quick. You know, and they're going, no, we're looking for two guys who, took down this liquor store or whatever, and I'm going, whoa, that wasn't me. I couldn't remember where I came from, but I was going, that wasn't me, you know. And as I'm getting out of the car, I'm falling into it from all these red lights there, you're not the guy. Boom, they jump back in the car and take off again, right? And so they grab a few more and go, oh! You know, and then I remember this tremendous feeling of power after that. It was like, you know, I can get away with anything. And that's kind of like the way my addiction went for a long time. You know, all of those of you who've done like prison time or jail time, I know by the grace of God that I should have been there. I should have been there for some reason or another. God just chose me not to do that. But you know what? I've dropped those differences. I thought about that. Today I go into a panel at the jail, and I go there, and I remember the first time I went in there telling them, hey, I don't think I've got anything to offer you guys because I've never been to jail. And you know what those guys told me? They told me, you know what? You're doing something that we could never do. So you keep coming back. And I said, well, Dad, you've been saying, clean. We don't know how you're doing that. You don't care what you've done jail time or not. And so what I did is I continued to do that kind of. I still do that. I was supposed to do that for tonight, but that's okay. Because, you know, today I can fulfill a commitment that I've made and feel good about it. What happened for me after that was I continued to use every day, and it became a job, stay loaded all the time. And the end for me was, I was sitting at home. She'd already left. It wasn't the home that we actually lived in, because they were getting ready to take that away from us. And she'd been threatening to leave me for a long time, and she did. And I said, screw it, go. I can stay by myself. You know, deep down inside, what I was doing, I was processing, thinking about, man, you just made a decision between your wife and your kids over drugs. I had no power to say anything different than that. I remember that feeling. Because I remember saying to myself, at some point in time, you lost control of the use of drugs. Drugs now have you under control. Because I can't even say then that, you know what? My family's more important to me than the use of drugs. And I made that conscious decision, and it was another moment of clarity for me, because I remember the guilt behind that. I brought that with me here into Narcotics Anonymous. And, I tell this story because I really truly believe this is what happened. And her mother showed up from Arizona.
The bitch, I didn't like her anyway.
Anyway, I said, you know, so I never talked to her, but she showed up, and they were getting ready to walk out the door, and my two daughters, who were like 7 or 8 at the time, I can't remember how old they were, they were walking out the door too. And I remember the first time I showed this with my sponsor, I remember looking into their eyes and them asking me a question about, why have you chosen alcohol and drugs over us? And you know what? That never happened. It took me 4 years into recovery to finally sit down one day as I was doing this inventory gun. They didn't say that. What had happened was, that's what I thought they were saying, but I looked in their eyes. It was my own guilt that was going through that. And so, it was like a revelation. I remember I told them to talk to them, hey, you want to lie, I didn't think of this, you know. They didn't say that, they didn't say that. It's like, you know, it was like something that I made up in my own mind. And, but you know what, again, I kind of relived that shame and guilt again. So, you know, I came into Narcotics Anonymous, and you guys told me that I needed to learn how to forgive myself. That, you know, that being a drug addict was not a moral dilemma, you know. That all of you guys were making those same kinds of decisions as well. And that we didn't have any choice. Because once we were addicted to the drug, and which I was a long time ago, that I didn't have any other choice. Other than to stay loved, because I didn't know how to do it any different than that. And the end for me was she'd gone, and I was alone in the house by myself, doing drugs by myself at that time. Warden Schwartz, this has been coming on for a long time, but the timing, like, finalizing itself out. I take a hit off that pipe, as soon as I take a hit off that pipe, I drop into physical seizure. You know, and so I kind of came to go, wow, that was really great. I'll do this again, right? Really, bottom line, was what was happening was, in my mind, I was going, uh-oh, something's happening here, right? And it's not about getting high anymore, it's about maybe possibly I'm coming to an end. I was dying. I didn't realize that I was dying. See, I hadn't taken a bath in like 2 weeks, and I hadn't gone to the bathroom for like probably 10 days. And I didn't know that. I only found that out after I detoxed, right? Is that, and things were insane then. You know, for those of you that have done speed, it's like, we know what the paranoia and all that crap is all about, right? That was like long, heavy duty. And so, I remember laying on the floor, and the pipe was sitting over there, and all I could remember was listening to Richard Pryor talk about the pipe started talking to me. And I was going, I'm experiencing the same thing. He was like, come here, pick me up, man. Come on, you can do it again. You have to do it again. You can't leave the dope in the pipe like that, right? And I remember reaching over there and grabbing it, and I take it off of it again, and go, you know what? I'm in trouble, man. I'm in trouble. But yet, I get the dope all the way to the end. And then, I like to bring this part of it in, too. I don't know how you guys supported your habits, but what happened was, because I thought that I was in money, what I did was I kept a job. See, the job was important. Because if I had the job, I had a way to pay for my drugs. And it kept me from realizing that I was a drug addict. See, because drug addicts didn't have jobs. They were in jail, right? Drug addicts, didn't have a camp or a house or all that other stuff that I thought I had that kept me different, feeling different than you guys, right? And so, as long as I had a job, I was in great shape. And, you know, this is kind of a period of time. It's the end of April and the first of May. See, my birthday is my belly button birthday is tomorrow. 17 years ago, I was at the same place, feeling exactly like I'm telling you right here, you know, about, man, what's going on here, you know, it's like, now what am I going to do? So, I missed 40 days of work at a job that fires you for missing 5, from January to May, okay? 40 days I've been gone from work, and I had this ability to be able to talk myself out of things. You know, the power is there, Bobby. You got the power, you can stop them in anything. And I should have been fired. And I knew that was coming. I was coming to a close, right? And so what I did was I thought, man, you've got to do something. What are you going to do? And I went by the bulletin board at work one day, and there was a client who said, "What problem?" I was with them, right? And I was going, "Well, let's see. Let me get the heat off my back. If I could probably take the spray so they set me up this appointment." They said, "You need to be in an inpatient program." And I'm going, "Then you're right. You know, if I could get somewhere and be there for like 30 days or so, then I would be able to put this thing under control." And that's the mindset I had when I went in. Is that I'm not gonna quit. The idea of quitting was so fearful for me. I've been using drugs for over 30 years and it has been working for me for all those years. The concept of not using drugs was just inconceivable. It was just totally inconceivable. I knew that if I was incarcerated somewhere for a period of time and it took me away from it, it might work, right? For that little short period of time, that's the reservation I brought into that recovery. I went in there thinking, "All right, just give me a break. Give me a break. I'll be able to do this. I'll be able to, quote, be in control again. You know, I'll buy a quarter of a grand next time instead of, you know." And I kept that. And the way that I kept that was, I do what sometimes I do in recovery. You know, I look at you. And I go, "Hey, you got a problem. I know what your problem is." You know, the therapist ever says, I'll be going, "Hey, Bobby, when you start talking about you?" And I developed this nickname that they call me Dr. Bob. Because I knew what everybody else's problem was, but I wasn't going to talk about mine. Well, no. I wasn't going to quit, but I wasn't going to say that out loud. You know? And so, then God stepped into my life. They forced me to go to AA and NAB. That's my first introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. And I didn't know it at the time. But it was going to be the thing that God saved my life. God saved my life. I went there and I started doing it. You don't ever have to live that way. Yeah, but not me. And then they kept saying, "Keep coming back." And I'm like, "Yeah, not me." And so I continue to have this reservation. But see, I don't know what kind of drug addict you guys are, but the kind of drug addict I am is that I'm always trying to save my face and my ass, right? So I went over beating things to make a sign of cars, right? Never going to find cars, but I had to go beat, right? And so I went to those meetings after the car signed, and then I got out of the program. They told me how to do the outpatient program, but you should probably still continue to do me because they told me to do that. Keep coming back. You do 90 days. Yeah, as long as I'm in their eyes, then I'll be fine, right? And then I remember going to an outpatient meeting. We had an outpatient meeting probably the second week after I got out of that facility, and the whole time I was being assessed. I'm just totally obsessed about when can I do it. How can I be able to do it without anybody else? No. Right? I mean, that's the way my 2 weeks after that went. I wasn't sharing it with anybody. And so, I went to the outpatient meeting, and in the outpatient meeting, there was a guy that was in our group in there, and he came in, and he was all tore up, man. He looked like he'd been out for about 4 or 5 days. Everybody knew he got loaded. And we were all pointing our fingers at him, going, "What did you do, man? You screwed up," you know, the things that I was doing. So I was looking at somebody else and never looking at me. And you're sitting there in the therapist. I'm never forget this. The therapist was in there, and she was talking to all of us. And she goes, "You know, there's a chapter in the Narcotics Anonymous book called Relapse and Recovery. And sometimes relapse is good for people." And that's all I heard. I didn't hear anything else after that. And I took a hit off, and I thought I was getting just before time, making my news is on something too, and I'm laying down in the seat. And I'm going,
oh, what's this shit? I'm in the seizure again. And all of a sudden I'm back in the knee again, right? Your disease is going to take right off of where it left off. That's all I can hear. That's all I can hear. Your disease is going to take right off of where it left off, and I'm going, oh my God, maybe these guys are telling the truth. Now what are you going to do, Bobby? Well, what are you going to do now? That was feeling really sick. It's about how am I going to really do this thing without drugs. So I stayed on the fence for a long time. You know what? I'm not going back in the meeting to tell them my news. Screw that. But my liquid's going to go down the tube. So I didn't do that. But the saving grace was that I tried to try and save my face. What I did is I kept coming back to me. Because if I was there, you guys wouldn't have known that I relapsed, right? So I kept going back to me. And I kept going every day. And what happened was the meaning behind keep coming back started sinking in. I started, you know, the readings were talking about being open-minded, honest, and willing. Those words talked to my head, it started sounding different, right? Honest. Honest means telling you that. Right? And I'm going, oh, I'll have to stay open-minded for a while.
Forget the honest part, right?
And I went to meetings and I picked up chips. I continued to pick up chips after that meeting. And what happened was the guilt and shame came back again, that old familiar feeling. You know, it's like, now I'm damned if I do and damned if I don't. What am I going to do? And what happened was I went back out a couple more times after that, and I was on my way to pick up the, quote, 90-day ship.
You know, I didn't have the 90 days I didn't have.
Right. The 90 days I didn't have. And I was driving to a meeting in what happened was I sat through the whole meeting, and the way I sat through the meeting, I sat there with my head down between my legs, with a dilemma about, okay, what are you going to do now? You know, you can't live with it, you can't live without it, right? So, what are you going to do? And what happened was that God took over again. You know what it is? There's a person sitting next to me. At the end of the meeting, that person stood up, you know, after, you know, they were starting to pass out chips. They did the chips at the end of the meeting, at this meeting, and he says, you know, they called his day, whatever that was, you know, the 60 days, or whatever. I don't even remember what it was, but I remember he stood up. He said, you know what, I relapsed. And I remember thinking to myself, man, that took a lot of courage. That took a lot of courage to be able to do that. And I'd like to tell you that I said to myself, stand up. That's not what happened. I felt like something picked me up from the shoulder and told him, you know what, stand up, Bobby, and tell him the truth. And I stood up, and with all the shame and the guilt that I had, I remember thinking, I can't even do this thing right now. I can't even do this right. I stood up and said, I did too. And magic happened. It was magic that happened after that. That meeting closed, and that meeting closed, every person in that meeting came up to me and him and told us to keep coming back, that you're going to be okay. And thanks for telling the truth. And that day closed up. August 6th, 1988. I haven't had to use it. I get real emotional about that because I can't begin to trust you with having these birthdays. You know? You know if there was a difference between my birthday and May and August, right? So what happened was that I found a place where I feel comfortable. You know, I found a place that people talk the same kind of language I do. And you know, this may piss a lot of some people off at the beginning, but that's the time I'm going to say it anyway because that's my recovery. And that is that in the beginning, and I can remember this probably too, that there weren't a lot of narcotics anonymous meetings around our area back in 1988. As a matter of fact, in the Solari County area, there was only probably three or four that I know. So in order to fill those 90 days, 90 meetings in 90 days, I had to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. the readings too. There's a little thing down there. If you read the reading carefully, it says down there, we'd like to thank AA for providing us with information about the 12 traditions.
Another kid, and this kid heard that for the first time, and He couldn't see. He couldn't see. He didn't know how to see. And so he said, I'm going to die.
I'm going to die.
You know, I always think back about when I was a little kid wanting my dad to hug me. And feeling so insecure with the fact that I wasn't going to be okay. And you know what? The door closed. I closed that door with a resentment. And what happened was I didn't know that God was going to bring me here, right? So that I could not only get clean, but I could also find out something about myself and find a fellowship that's a loving, caring fellowship that cares truly about me. And so what I do today is I try not to look for the differences. You know, in the book, it's asking her about how you tell the book for the difference, not the similarity. Now, I'm sort of guilty of that sometimes. Well, I look for differences in you, but what I have to really hang on to is that I better hang on to the similarities, because when I need you the most, you are always there for me. Always. You've never let me down. I mean, there's some people who don't show up, but you know what? I learned how to forgive them, too, because that's another spiritual principle they're teaching me here in their class about me. That I need to forgive people that I dislike. Because when I'm looking at the differences in you, I'm really looking at probably my own shortcut, or my own character defect. So I got a lot of work to do in here in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. I used to think that this program was all about time. It's not about time. It's about how I apply myself while I'm here. So that I can find out that I am worthwhile. And you know what? You have to give yourself a break, man. If you're working the steps and you kind of like put it on hold for a minute, kind of weigh that out and figure out what that payback is to you. Because see, when I do that kind of stuff, when I put stuff off, there's a payoff for me. I learned that here in Narcotics Anonymous by doing the inventory. The payoff for me is that I don't think that I'm worthwhile sometimes. And I'll fail it out. I'll fail it out by continuing not to do something. Right? That's what I've been always telling you in here. Keep coming back and keep working the steps. And every time I remember put off working the steps, what it is, I get that payoff again. That payoff is that I'm a victim and I'm going to continue to stay a victim, but nobody made me that way except me. It was my choice. You know what? There's an amazing thing that happens when you find that out. You're no longer a victim. You're the one that makes the choice. And I don't choose to feel that way. But what I did was I took some suggestions that my sponsor gave. And I started taking those actions that got me outside of myself. You know? Well, I started doing things where they told me to get in service work. They put me in service work immediately when I got here. And it wasn't something simple like being a secretary. It was things that tried to teach me something about humility. Like, go out and pick up cigarette butts tonight. Bullshit. I'm not picking up cigarette butts. Well, because it's not to pick up their own. No, you're going to go pick them up. So that you can learn. And so, you know, I started complaining about these people. Smoking. And eventually I didn't know that I was going to quit smoking and Narcotics Anonymous. I ended up quit smoking, you know, and I got a more of an appreciation for what it took to do something for somebody without ever looking for recognition. And then they made me a secretary, and I became a secretary, and I learned something about responsibility. And what it was about giving back. I wasn't taking anymore from Narcotics Anonymous.
Okay.
So it was about giving back. And that's what I've learned how to do here. Because, you know what? If I want to fulfill that worthless feeling I have inside, do something for somebody else. And so I've done that. I've stayed in service work, except for a 3-year period, 3.5 period of time. Because I chose to want that payoff again. See? I stepped away from it thinking, you know what? I was tired of the personalities. I was looking at the differences, and I wasn't looking at the similarities. And I, you know, somebody said something in a speaker meeting one day that made sense to me. You know, they told me, that, you know what? Why don't you do service work for the person who hasn't gotten here yet? And I was going, what a concept. I was going, I never thought about those people. You know, I never thought about those people who haven't gotten here yet. See, because as long as I follow the traditions that I'm working on ensuring that groups stay together, and I'm doing my part in that, you know, not your part, but just mine, as long as I stay in service, because they told me that's what I need to do, well, I'm going to get a payoff for that. The payoff for me is that I'm going to feel good about me because I'm doing something for somebody and not looking for recognition. The other thing is that when that person walks in the door of this building or any other building where Narcotics Anonymous is going on, it's because we all have worked on either working the traditions or working the steps to find out something more about it than to get outside of ourselves. So if you read this book and you haven't gotten to the point yet where you've read about the spiritual principles, that's ideally for me now. Okay, this is my opinion, where I want to be. I'm never going to be perfect at it, but I've gotten some hope here. The hope is that if I continue to do the things I'm doing, I'm going to continue getting the things I get. And I'm not going to be in step two with the insanity anymore. Trying to think that if I still act the same way that I do when I first got here, well, I'm going to continue to get different kinds of results. It ain't going to happen. You know? And we all know how to feel guilty and shame. You know, it's like, and I'm here to tell you that there's another side of that. The other side is that, there's a better feeling. There's a different way to be able to change how you feel. You know, and it's all here in what they teach us here in Narcotics Anonymous. Now, let's get to the heart of the matter here. You know what? When I first got in here, they were talking about this little white book was the only thing that they had to read. Right? And I had an opportunity on Wednesday to read out of that little white book to a group of kids that are in high school or they're in primary school. They're in continuation school. We walked in the door and part of public information's responsibility is to continue to pass the message. And you walk in the door and the teacher goes in and he goes, I don't know if you guys know what kind of environment you're stepping into here. And I said, you mean the kids? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, drugs are profound here. It's like, I said, well, who the hell do you think we want to pass the message to? The people that aren't using? I said, we're glad to be here. So, we opened it up and there's all these teenagers in there and they're all looking at us like, what kind of a message are these people going to pass? And you know what happened? All we did was we went in there and shared our experience, strength, and our hope. We opened it up by telling them, we're not here to tell you to stop using drugs. We're just here to tell you that there's a place you can come when you're done. And hopefully you're not in jail, institutions, and you haven't died. And there's a place where you can find freedom. The same kind of freedom you're seeking when you're using drugs. And you know what? The quietest presentation we've ever given. There's 40 kids in there who are drug addicts that I know are drug addicts. The parents are drug addicts, and they kept quiet. And they listened. And they took the literature that we gave to them. And I don't know that we saved any of them, because I didn't go there to save them. I went there to save me. Okay? And, there's a tremendous feeling in being able to be in a position where you can now pass the message. The message is we do recover. You recover. They talk about winners in this program, right? You know who the winners are? The winners are the people who are talking about working the steps and reading the books. And if you get tired of hearing that, and you're not doing it, give yourself a break. It's not just about coming to meet with people. It hasn't been for me. Meetings are important because I need to hear you, and you need to hear me. But the bottom line is I'm not going to make any kind of a change in myself or the helpers in this program without getting into the book and reading it. And then be able to walk up to Bobby and they go, you're pretty shit, I didn't say that in here. It's like, because that's what I did in the beginning. I actually read it on his pipe. It's about the pipe. So let me find something in here that they're saying. And you know what I found out is that when I started putting all that aside, I started learning something about me. And what it is that I'm a better person today. I'm a better person. I'm a better father. The life of love is back with me in July of this year. We'll celebrate 35 years of being together. Mm-hmm. It didn't work. 3 years of recovery. Both her and I went into a marriage counseling meeting. And I learned to do something that I've never ever done before. And that is, it's what you guys taught me here. This is not just about me. My disease is the self-centered part of the disease, but this is not about me. What I need to start doing now is listening to what her needs were and start fulfilling this. You know what it required me to do? It required me to compromise. Because what it was that in order to be able to make her happy, I had to understand what she needed. She needed to learn to communicate to me what she needed. And in turn, I got a chance to be able to talk to her about what I
short on that? We do. We fall short on it, and we argue and stuff, but the bottom line is that we've made a lot more progress toward being able to express it to each other what those are. And I never would have thought that I didn't come to my conference tomorrow. I have two girls that one of them is getting ready to get a teacher's credential. She's been through a hard time. She was like, she's my first one. Like, you know how they kind of lash on the one, not the other, more than you do the other. It was like, I had a lot of hopes and dreams for her. She was like, an overachiever, like someone, we all are. I mean, all of the guys are overachievers. And they just pick that up from us, right? And at 17 years old, she got pregnant, and I'm clean, and it broke my heart. It broke my heart. I was going, I ran over to my sponsor's house. I remember sitting in your car. I can't even protect from that. And then I just up to the dentist again. The guy was out of bed. He's never seen his baby. He saw her the day she was born, he's never seen her since. And I always said to myself, you know what? He better not ever come back. And you know what I'm going to do? When I can't help myself, God's taking care of him. He never thought of that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
You're telling yourself. And that's what I needed to do. I told them myself. I said, Doug, I don't, you know, embrace the drug anymore. Because I know what the end result is. I pray that all the way through. If I don't want that relationship with my wife, if I don't want that relationship with my children, if I don't want to be able to look at my granddaughter anymore, she's 11 years old and has never seen me use. She'll never ever see that side of me again, because I don't choose to pick up a drug one day at a time. And, you know, my expectations since I've been here are not so unrealistic anymore. I'm learning to accept. I still make mistakes. You know, I spent some time with the sponsor on the way over here today, and you know, we're talking about anger and powerlessness, and that works. It just continues to remind me that I don't have to be there anymore. That I can be valuable to somebody else and be there for them. And one of the things he said to me before we got out of the car was like, don't leave me. You know what? I'm not here to do that. You know, I'm hoping that I'll be available for him as well as for you. Because I need you guys here. I need you here too. Because if you didn't come to these meetings, I wouldn't have anybody I could share this with. See, and that's how it works. You share it with each other. And what I mean is I move on to the pitch that I usually try and pitch, and that is that service work has saved my life. And it continues to do it today. I've developed the biggest resentment I've ever had in service work this year. Because they're not doing it my way. And you know what I've learned how to do is that I'm not staying in that misery anymore. What I do is I pick up a pen and paper and I find out what is your part of it. Forget about what their part is. Just look at what your part is. Because I've learned from how to do that here in my college tonight. And you know what? It always comes out to the same. The issue is always the same. It's something that I've done wrong. It's something that I'm expecting from them that they can't deliver to me. It's something I'm expecting from myself that I can't deliver to me. And it's unrealistic. I know that today. So, I'm not perfect. But, I'm not perfect. None of us are. But, I hope that you guys find a little bit of what I found here in Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to thank Bob and Mike for inviting me to share. Thanks for that, sure.
All right.